glad to be back with you for the next installment of our monthly macro podcast with UBS Asset Management. As you know, each month we do hear from top investment professionals from the UBS Asset Management multi-asset team. So with that, joining us for this month's podcast, glad to welcome back Evan Brown, portfolio manager and head of multi-asset strategy. Also joining us today, Fatou Kanté, multi-asset investment specialist. So with that, Fatou, I'll now pass it over to you to lead today's conversation with Evan. Welcome back.
Thanks, Dan. Happy to be here again with Evan. We're reaching the tail end of the summer, and there's plenty to talk about given the market volatility that we've seen recently. And so we'll discuss what's been driving markets, our economic and asset allocation views, and then we'll close out by going into how we're positioned in the MAPS portfolio. So let's jump right in, Evan. What's driven the volatility over the last week?
Yeah, it's been an eventful week, Fatou. So, you know, I would ignore people who say it was one particular thing. You know, it's not like the Bank of Japan suddenly tightening is what sparked all of this. It's a buildup of positioning. And we basically had a one-way bet in global equities, U.S. S&P 500 up. What 37% since October of last year, along with Japanese yen weakening in a straight line and people borrowing in Japanese yen, low interest rates, and investing into higher currency strategies. And so basically anything that ran for a while and got popular and then got leveraged investors to take on more and more leverage to get on that momentum train, whether it was the Magnificent Seven, whether it was these yen-funded carry trades. Whenever there's a hiccup and that positioning is that extended, there's the potential for some kind of crash. And that's what we've seen. I mean, the Mag 7 companies, there's a very high bar for earnings for some of those companies, and so that took some of the steam out of them. Bank of Japan, yes, began to tighten, and that led to a sharp appreciation of the yen and a unwind of carry trades. And then you had, you know, this weak, outright weak employment report on Friday, which kind of questioned everyone's views about the state of the economy, and all led to a reset of market risk premia. But we do think that a lot of what we've seen, or just it's certainly the speed and magnitude of what we've seen in markets over the last few days, greatly exaggerates the change in underlying fundamentals in the economy. It's because of a big unwind in a lot of these popular trades. And, but when you get dislocations like this, you know, that creates opportunities for active investors, right? And dislocations in the market that, you know, our stock pickers and we are looking to take advantage of. So, it's these kind of environments that we like as active investors.
You mentioned a bit that the economy is slowing. How concerned are you about a U.S. recession?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that the probability of a recession has ticked up. You know, we are seeing some softening in the labor market. The unemployment rate is rising. It's probably not quite as bad as Friday's employment report suggests, because we had Hurricane Beryl, and it looks like that impacted a lot of the numbers, and so should see some bounce back in the print we get for August at the beginning of September. But we have been seeing a cooling labor market. Some of the leading indicators that we track globally have been rolling over a bit, and so there is definitely some cooling happening. I would say, yeah, the recession risks have tilted up. We still have a soft landing as our base case. And you know, the reason for this is that, yes, the unemployment rate is rising, but a lot of this is just due to higher labor supply, whether it's driven by immigration or domestically. We have not seen much of a sign of a pickup in layoffs, and that's when you get nervous about some kind of nonlinear effects in unemployment. We are not seeing that. It's backward looking, but overall final demand, consumption, been growing at a healthy pace. There's room to cool without there being a recession. In terms of the credit cycle, overall credit looks okay. Senior loan officer survey, which we got yesterday, is showing improving credit conditions. And, rates are coming down. Long-term rates are coming down, and the Fed soon is going to be cutting rates. And that should support some of the sectors which are interest rate sensitive and have been beaten down, like housing and durables. So, I just also just reiterate something we've mentioned a lot on these podcasts is just how strong private sector balance sheets are and how uniquely strong they are in aggregate this cycle. And the way you normally get a recession is because you've built up a lot of leverage in the system. I'm not talking about hedge fund leverage or investor leverage. I'm talking about economic leverage, consumers and businesses being heavily in debt and over their skis. And we just don't have that, right? So we can still have a recession. We're watching the data closely, but on net, I still think the soft landing is the highest probability outcome.
So you've painted the picture for where we are now. What are you going to be following in the coming weeks to give you an idea on where the economy is headed?
Yeah, so it's all about the labor market, right? We unfortunately don't get that next employment print, which should be cleaner than the last one in terms of weather effects. We don't get that until early September. But what we do get each Thursday morning at 8:30 Eastern is initial jobless claims. And it's probably the highest frequency indicators that give you a sense of how the labor market is tracking. And those have been rising a little bit, although not more than on a non-seasonally adjusted basis, not more than we've seen around this time of year in non-recessionary years. But if we, start seeing a spike higher, that would get us more concerned. For the consumer, we're always watching, of course, retail sales. We'll have that next week. We'd like to start to see signs that consumers and businesses are responding to lower rates. So our mortgage applications, is refi activity picking up a bit, durable spending and the like. So these are all some things that we're tracking until we get that employment report next month.
There was a lot of talk about a market rotation in mid-July after a small cap rally and a big tech sell-off. And this seems to have been eclipsed by the market sell-off we just discussed. What exactly drove this small cap rally? And do you see there being a sustained change in the market leadership throughout the rest of the year?
Yeah, so the small cap rally, I mean, small caps tend to be, have higher debt than large caps and more floating rate debt than large caps. And so as we saw interest rates decline, as we've seen over the last couple of months, along with the economic data still coming in just fine, that led to a significant repricing higher of small caps, where it's just the perfect scenario where you have lower funding costs and you have a still solid economy. But as we've gotten accumulation of some disappointing prints on the economy, there's kind of been an uh-oh moment for a lot of those that rally in small caps, because given that a lot of these small caps are highly economically sensitive and that's led to some concerns about how they'll do in a more pronounced slowdown. So look, we think small caps as long as we get that soft landing, we'll be fine. But given, you know, a slower environment in general, a cooling in the economic data, we have and continue to have a preference for large caps generally. But large caps, when I talk about large caps, I'm talking about a more balanced exposure, not just market cap, which is heavily weighted towards mega cap tech, but getting, you know, like equal weight exposures or exposures via our active managers to a broad set of securities.
Evan, as always, thank you for your time. I think the team has put a great deal of thought into positioning our portfolios to capitalize on some of the market volatility that we're seeing. And with that, thanks everyone for listening in.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreement and disclosures that we provide to you about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary or ask your UBS financial advisor for a copy.